Welcome back. This is the Paula Gordon Show. Bill Russell and I are in Bloomington, Indiana, with Janos Starker in his wonderful music room. I think there's a perception that musicians who are great touring artists, who are known all over the world, somehow have a very simple life. And every time I am here and have a chance to observe what you do, I am disabused of that notion. The fact that you choose to be a world class, you once introduced me to the idea of the golden class. You won't let me say that you're the world's greatest cellist, that there are many greatests. But the fact that you have
no such thing.
Right.
Most famous, yes. Greatest, no. Remember, I used the expression that the or class in the French expression is that some people get up to a certain level, and from that moment on, it's a subjective judgment of the audiences that who they consider for themselves the number one or number two.
Well, that's really what you've been talking about. I mean, once you've reached into this narrowly constrained space and have done all the things you need to do.
I didn't decide to become a famous concertizing artist. I always said that if I do something well, eventually it will be recognized. And the fact is that you're sitting in my music room in Bloomington proves the point, which I always said, that I chose a road which is much less glamorous than what people associate with concertizing artists. I have been in every major city of the world and on all continents, received all the glories and recognitions and so on, but I'm much happier when I come home and do the job which I consider more important, which means help others to get the maximum out of themselves.
Not only the teaching function, but I would like you to tell me about the musical lineage, your musical lineage, that literally reaches all the way back to Bach. And that continuity, I think, is also a very important element in thinking about the role of classical music. Not only are you willing to
genealogically, I'm not related to Bach.
All right, musically. Thank you for that correction.
I'm reading all kinds of biographies, and I see people whose fathers and grandfathers and great-great-fathers
were musicians.
And so on. My musical genealogy is that my teacher was a student of Popper, and I played with people who were students of Franz Liszt, and Franz Liszt, I think, knew Beethoven and so on. In this sense, I can go back, but it's rather laborious to claim that.
Suffice it to say that there is a very strong sense of continuity through hundreds of years of a developing, very complex kind of music that in the world at large is honored for being timeless and being what we call classical. Doesn't that very continuity itself offer us some guidance as we live in a time of great change? I'm sorry to go back to where I started, but I continue to think that there are threads here.
You see, I think as recently as in 1954, we were sitting in my apartment in Chicago when I was principal chef of the Chicago Symphony, and my then wife came up with a philosophy which I'm still subscribing to, which is ideorealism or ideorealism, depending on the usage of the language, which means we are idealists.
You are?
Yes, but realist, very much so. So which means the answer to your question, yes, the idealism is that it's going to continue and allow the continuation of the great traditions and the discipline and the Puritan simplicity. Realism says only for a small percentage of the world.
Which is fine, isn't it?
I have nothing against it. I read just when people ask me, am I optimist about the future of music? Of course I am. I do say that there was a stupidity committed in the American musical life and in the European musical life, that they increased the supply instead of increasing at the same time parallel the demand, which means that
the supply of the musicians?
Yes, incredible what goes on in instrumental playing standards in every field. They're far better than hundreds of cellists in the world who play far better than most of the great cellists of yesteryear. But the fact is that the audience has not grown.
Well,
they didn't fall off, but they just didn't keep up the same space or speed as the supply.
How do you fix that?
Right now, because of the stupidity committed in the early 60s, Fulford Foundation grants of throwing in a fortune into musical life. And they lengthened the orchestra seasons, which we rejoiced for our fellow musicians. They started building bigger and bigger halls. And then the schools like mine pouring out into the world hundreds and hundreds of terrifically well-trained musicians. They have forgotten to take care of music education. No, they are doing something, and they're more and more and more.
With the children?
But there is a 20-year lapse in between. Mm-hmm. So which means music is not going to die unless it's getting so loud that it causes ear cancer, if you remember. I told that to myself. But the fact is that music is doing well, and the performing arts as such are doing terrifically well. Hopefully, eventually, they catch up, so in the same rate as population grows, and the same way as the musician output is, the supply grows, then the demand will also. It's market understanding.
Well, yeah, and what, you know, you're talking very, very much, or at least raise the subject of economics, and at least in the short term, it would appear that there's some real challenges as the marketplace become so dominant. So many symphonies in this country are struggling for, you know, or say they're challenged for economic reasons.
My hope truly is that if I want to be specific about what I have in mind, is that we have the black population and we have the Hispanic population, and they are gaining strength economically. When they reach a certain level, then they will be able to afford to spend money and time and enjoyment in the arts. That old notion, which was devastating at one time, that classical music is white man's music, has to disappear and has to be eradicated. It's working, but very slowly. One day, when their economic situation will be better and better, then you will see more and more of the kids learning music, not necessarily to become musicians, but simply to enrich their existence. And the parents will consider classical music as a viable future for them, and not just the sports and the pop fields.
Well,
and the Latinos
and with this
will do the one, because they are the increasing population. That's where we
and
have
that,
to
that,
focus
that,
on.
That also argues, like, I would guess that, you know, the education in primary, secondary school, and also just, you know, the cultural accessibility. And I don't mean cultural in terms of high culture. I mean just within the social cultural environment. This type of music is accessible and made accessible the same way that other forms of music or arts are made available.
What about people who have kids who are saying, well, gee, Paula, you're talking to one of the world's great teachers. Should I send my 7-year-old off to take music lessons if I don't think he's going to grow up, or she, to be a concert artist?
Well, let's not forget one of the great influences in the right direction, in some sense, Mr. Suzuki, who started teaching the 3 years old and 4 years old, and the importance, people were asking about it, is it the right method? Who the heck cared? It was simply involving children and their parents, which means that eventually they become audiences. Some of them, the exceptionally gifted ones, will become professional musicians or performing musicians. These are the kind of things that we need to expose children at the earliest age to all kind of artistic manifestation, not just music, to appreciate paintings, to appreciate literature, and so on. In my field, music, obviously, I'm concerned about that. Once the country and the countries, because it's not just American, the same thing goes on in Germany, what we lament on occasion in the United States, it's everywhere the same thing. In Japan, they say that only young people go to the concert, because once the women get married and the men start working, they don't go to concert. The same problem exists universally. The fact is that once you expose children to music, then they will be potential listeners, and that's what we want.
Isn't it more than exposing, though? Isn't there something very special about having participated in the act of making music, even if you drive your parents crazy with the squawks in the first year?
Both. But exposing means, I don't mean just to let them listen to music. I mean them to play an instrument, no matter badly or well. And a small percentage will show the kind of talent which justifies the higher education of music for them or whatever.
We're going to be back in just a moment with Janos Starker. Bill Russell and I are in Bloomington, Indiana. I am Paula Gordon, and I have the pleasure to have the Paula Gordon Show. Please be with us when we return.